Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep. Stimulate those who are awakened. Feed those who are starving. And nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank Retalk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can also reach us at on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in Retalk Productions and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, rape, drugs, aggression, murder, tools of the oppressor. Black people have historically been subjected to sexual violence, drugs, aggression, and murder in order to maintain white supremacy. Through fear, intimidation, and death, the struggle continues. Drugs as a weapon wasn't the child born of the Iran-Contra scandal. In fact, it appears to have always been a weapon. In the spirit of those who do not know their history are doomed to repeat it from biography. I'm going to start off with this story of the least person you would think would be subject of a government agency. Billie Holiday. Now, she's, if you don't know who she is, she was a jazz singer, blues singer. She's as hell as one of the best ever. And she had a very particular sound, and she's famous for singing the song about strange fruit. And it's a song about the lynchings that took place back in those times, it was in the mid-1900s. Not saying that they stopped or anything like that, I'm just saying around that time. So anyway, part of the lyrics was said something like, the southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in their southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. So, the strange fruit was the bodies of black men, women, and children who were lynched commonly in the South. But I wouldn't draw the line there. So, it just happens that on a particular night, she received a warning from the then agency called the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, the FBN, a government agency which lasted from 1930 to 1968. Basically, they was telling her she was never to sing the song again. So this guy named Harry Anslinger, that's the commissioner, did everything in his power to stop her. He did everything except had somebody just shoot her in the head, run her over with a car. What they did was he took advantage of her weaknesses. They hounded her, the agency, he used the agency to hound her until she died. And he was largely responsible for her death, according to the information that I've read. I'm not sure. Now, he was a major player in the reason why she died and the reason why, period. We just can go ahead with this story. They planted drugs on her. They paid off boyfriends to keep pumping her with drugs when she was trying to get off drugs. So, I guess Anslinger was a drug czar. I guess you can look at him like that. I guess he's trying to supposedly. He was known as an extreme racist in the 1920s. It was no secret, right? They said when he first took on the role at the new agency, as part of the Treasury Department, he was determined to eradicate all drugs everywhere. He had previously been part of the Department of Prohibition, which you know was back then in the 20s, they stopped the sale of alcohol. It was prohibited. So prohibition had been abolished, so he was on another tear. from biography. Among his strategies was his belief that jazz music, that's music. I don't know who's listening, but jazz music, check it out. You can see a lot of that with the, like I said, Lady All Day, Billie Holiday, Louie, all them cats. Quincy Jones, a more recent guy that people might be familiar with. Bradford Marcellus, maybe people might know him, I don't know. Anyway, they believed that the jazz music was a part of the problem. And this sounds very relevant. If you just listen to the stories that's being told back here about this time, you can relate to this time. Right? Because not much has changed anyway. They said that the music sounded like the jungles in the dead of night. Jazz music sound like the jungles in the dead of night. That don't even make sense. He wrote another thing, said, unbelievably ancient and decent tribes of the East Indies are resurrected. What does that mean? The songs reek of filth. His agents were reported back to him that many of the jazzmen think they're playing magnificently under the influence of marijuana, but they were actually becoming hopelessly confused and playing horribly. So, from provocative thought, just on that right there, here we see demonizing the culture validates the assault and persecution of the practitioners. Actually, anybody that's in that environment. These men, I use that word lightly, cautiously, these men fear what they do not understand, like the fear of any gathering of black folks speaking or expressing a language and communicating beyond their comprehension. So if it's so decadent, does that go for Benny Goodman also? Biography reports that in 1928, Goodman released his first album, A Jazz Holiday. Goodman's a white boy. He's a European. Goodman teamed up with jazz promoter John Hammond in 1933 to make some recordings, including a few tracks with an up-and-coming jazz singer named Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday. Their work together resulted in the 1934 top 10 hit Riffin' the Scotch. All right, so back to the original article from biography. The reason for his targeting the jazz music came down to his widely known bias. This is a racist dude right here, y'all. But it's not to be unexpected. This is 1920s. You see what we have now. Imagine what they had back then. Because there's a lot of in-your-face stuff. Don't come in this way. You can't eat here. Boy. And, you know, all that kind of stuff going on back then. So you have to understand, they said that he was regarded as an extreme racist in the 20s. Imagine that. In the 20s, they was lynching black folks like it was like you're hanging out your clothes on a clothesline. You understand? And this guy was regarded as an extreme racist. Back when racism was, you know, was up in your face, like type, you know, that type of thing. Go in your house, pull you out of your house, throw you up on a tree. You know, catch you coming from somewhere, do the thing to you. No consequences. even took pictures with that kind of stuff. You know, I've seen, like, look like hundreds of people at some of these lynchings. Anyway, it said he was regarded as an extreme racist in the 1920s. He used the N-word so often in official memos, right? He's using it in memos. He's not just saying it over coffee. He's writing it down. That most of his own senators said he should have to resign. All right. So the controversial nature of Strange Fruit among the music scape at the time gave him the excuse he needed to go after Holiday, which does not make sense. She has a song about something that's really occurring. The controversial nature of the song, that's the controversy, not the actual lynching of black folks, the willful. Oh, this is how sick this thing is, man. They talking about this government agency is going after somebody singing a song, not even concerned about these bodies hanging from these trees. But as I said, he was regarded as an extreme racist in the 1920s. Why would he be concerned about the strange fruit? He probably picked some of that fruit. This is not a time when they had political pops, a lot of, like, you know, like, you know, nowadays, you know, you came up, especially in the 60s, all that political stuff. We had P.E., Tupac hit a little bit of something, KRS-One, you know, different people, Ice Cube, you know, came out with some real stuff about what was really going down in W.A., just with some raw stuff. We had The Last Poets, Gil Scott, Heron, when you hit an introduction on music in the beginning and end of the show, Gil was putting it down. They didn't have a lot of that back then. It was, boy, keep your mouth shut. Keep your eyes down. That kind of stuff. I'm not saying that anybody submitted to that, but it was a lot of that. And they said to have an African-American woman stand in front of a white audience singing a song against white supremacy and its violence was shocking. As I said, it was keep your eyes down, keep your mouth shut. You know, that kind of environment, that kind of expectation from people whom they stepping on throat on a daily. You know, they don't want you to scream. They don't even want you to sing a song about it. Shut the hell up. Unfortunately, Billie Holiday struggled with alcohol and drug addiction over the years. Okay. That's a weakness. This guy, Anslinger, A-N-S-L-I-N-G-E-R, became focused on taking Billie Holiday down because she sang about her reality. So much for freedom of speech. You understand what I'm saying? That's a violation of her freedom of speech right there. It's not insulting anybody. She's just talking about some bodies that nobody seemed to care about. So he sent undercover agents after Billie Holiday, believe it or not. This is a lady, an attractive young lady, had a drug habit, and could sing. So this racist didn't like hiring black agents, but he hired this agent by the name of Jimmy Fletcher to investigate Holiday. He was based in Harlem, and he wanted his agents to blend in, basically. This is a black guy. And his excuse is his belief that you victimize yourself by becoming a junkie. So he seemed like the right fit, they say, for the job, because he was already prejudiced towards her as an addict. So he made himself, known in the neighborhood. He saw her drinking and doing cocaine firsthand, but Holiday noticed him around too and grew to like him. Although Fletcher did eventually have to raid her, bust her, right? They grew close and were even seen dancing together at a club. It sounds like she grew close, and this clown here was doing his thing. Because you gotta ask yourself, how does a person's drug habit merit an agency focusing on her like that? She's a singer. Anyway, he had a lot of close conversations with her, he said, and he fell in love with Billie Holiday. She was the type that made someone sympathetic because she was so loving. Well, this is some provocative sort. And you know I got to rip this guy. Cause this bent over Sambo, buck broken Negro had the audacity to work for his oppressor and a known racist against his own kind. I heard they had captured slaves that ran off the plantation too. So he must be the descendant of one of them. But this Negro, and I'm being kind when I use that word, is something else. How could he be in disagreement with the reality of strange fruit? After all, it could have easily been his black ass hanging from a tree. How could he work for this guy? Seems like historically that has happened to black folks a lot, though. Gets worse. Holiday's husband worked with the FBN to set her up. The husband. Around the time, Holiday would often show up to her performances beaten by her husband, Louis McKay. So she eventually cut him off. You out, right? So he was enraged. I don't know why. Excuse me. He was enraged. Even being quoted as saying, "I got enough to finish her off." Well, what is that all about? This nut went down to Washington, D.C., met with Ann Slinger, and they decided that McKay would set Holiday up. So he's quite aware that she's targeted. And he's in cahoots with the enemy of his own people. Medium.com says, by Peter Offer, says Holiday's hard life was exacerbated by bad choices she made in men. In March 1957, Holiday married Louis McKay, a mafia enforcer. Now, that don't sound like no black mafia enforcer. He sound like he working for the Italian mafia. He's a black man. McKay was abusive at the time of her death. They were estranged, but not divorced. Holiday died, and under the New York law, McKay inherited her estate, including her royalties. How about that? The man that was beating her, abusing her up, got everything she had coming to her financially. It was estimated that at the time, these royalty interests were like from $15,000 to $20,000 annually. That's a lot of money back in those days. Right now, even now, if you get $20,000 annual, you ain't lift a finger to get it. You can't use the extra $15,000 a year. You ain't lift a finger. That's something. But back then, that was really something. Fun provocative thought. I don't want to get what I'm saying mixed up with these writers are saying. Even worse, this treasonous, backstabbing coward threw Lady Day under the bus for his own selfish reasons. And instead of helping her, he served her to the enemy of their people. Makes no sense. Anyway, the story goes on. Holiday was caught, put on trial. It was called the United States of America. The United States of America versus Billie Holiday. And she said that's the way she felt about it. As a result, she was sentenced to a year in prison in West Virginia, where she had to kick a habit. Of course, you know, it's hard to get drugs in jail. But also, she didn't sing a note, they said. That's interesting for a singer not to sing. So she was really going through it. Anyway, when she was released in 1947, a license to perform at her cabarets was revoked. This is how bad they want this woman to stop singing this song about the strange fruit in front of these white folks, because I guess it's touching some white folks that have some sense, and they want to know what is she singing about. And then the more they investigate, she's singing about how black people, men, women, and children are being lynched in America. So might be some white folks in there, you know, want to shake the trees, and they're not feeling a strange fruit thing. So they might look at some other white folks in a different light. Anyway, shortly after her release from jail, she sang at Carnegie Hall, sold out. Did 22 more times. So I see bigger Carnegie Hall. They had a lot of respect for her, black and white folks. Even after reportedly being framed, Holiday continued to perform Strange Fruit. So this monster and slinger wasn't done. He recruited Colonel George White, supposed to have been the first guy to infiltrate a Chinese drug gang. So Holiday said she had been clean for more than a year. White busted him Holiday at a San Francisco hotel, saying he found opium in a wastebasket and a heroin kit in the room. What was he doing in it? Like, this must be before they had these laws about probable cause and things like that. Anyway, that sounds like an illegal search, even like a plant kind of type thing. So he busted Holiday in San Francisco, saying he found an opium, you know, in a wastebasket and a heroin kit in the room. What was he doing in the room? That doesn't even make sense. How did you end up in her? That doesn't even make sense. It says pretty clear from reading the historical documents that White planted the drugs on Billie Holiday that night. So she was broken and destroyed again. And she got back on the path of addiction, right? This time things didn't quite bounce back. She goes through remission only to be addicted once again. And her career spiraled, right? But she kept performing throughout the 1950s. And most importantly, she kept singing Strange Fruit. I'm surprised she didn't come up with a song about her experience, because that was some strange ish going on too. One author gave her said the kind of courage, not only that she would risk her career and her career mobility, but that she actually risked her life and her freedom because she felt that she had to sing this song. Farrah Jasmine Griffin of Columbia University African American and African Dysphoria Studies told NPR. This guy, this monster from the FBN, continued to pursue Billie Holiday in the hospital. One day in 1959, Holiday collapsed. She went to the hospital. She feared this monster wasn't done with her, even after she was diagnosed with liver disease. So she goes into heroin withdrawal while she's at the hospital because she's not getting any, you know, kind of rehabilitation of medicine. No methadone, or whatever they treated her with back in the day. I think it was methadone. She wasn't getting none. She's going through heroin withdrawal. Right? A friend of hers managed to visit and insist that she was given methadone. And she began to recover. Heroin withdrawal is very dangerous if you're extremely physically weak. And Lady Day was, you know, she was very weak. And then her worst fears came true. Anslinger team arrested her on the hospital bed. They came in and arrested the lady on the hospital bed. For what? She fell out. She's sick. She's in the hospital trying to get treatment. She's getting some rehabilitation. This guy came and arrested her on his bed. So she had a friend, Alice Verbisky. It became clear what was happening, and the protests were even held outside the hospital as people carried signs saying, "Let Lady Day live," referring to her nickname, Lady Day. So that means these people outside, they know that this man is trying to kill this woman. So they marching and protesting outside. Somebody's trying to kill me, please do not march and protest outside. Come inside. Do something. Get between that person and me. Said, but after 10 days, The methadone was cut off at Asslinger's instruction. You can guess what happened. On July 17th, 1959, Holiday died. Asslinger reported with satisfied writing, "For her, there will be no more good morning heartache." Ain't that something? He had succeeded in his decades-long pursuit to take down Holiday, a task filled with his own racist views. He addressed Judy Garland's drug addiction by telling her to take longer vacations. Y'all don't know Judy Garland, that's the Wizard of Oz, the original Wizard of Oz, that's the little girl, off to see the wizard, with the ruby slippers on. That's Judy Garland. I heard she was abused in Hollywood, forced to take drugs, and just had low self-esteem, and basically she had it rough also. In September 1962, Asslinger was even honored by President John F. Kennedy for his work on the war on drugs. This chunk, this monster. Anyway, some provocative thought. How can a federal agent dictate a medical procedure? That is simply murder, and another instance where a white man gets to kill with impunity and nothing is done. In 1959, people marched and protest outside of the hospital, but marching and protesting then, as now, would not save a black person's life, especially when the monster seeking their death is the government. Her life demonization and infiltration by one of her own, and a missed opportunity for a black man to stand erect, to do something, yet he chose to appease his known oppressor. A racist among races. It speaks to the division black folks continue to have till this day. Black federal agents infiltrated the Black Panther Party. There's a movie portraying this atrocity called, I think it's called the atrocity of Billie Holiday, called The United States versus Billie Holiday. I think they made a movie about that. I heard someone say that the song was un-American when it was absolutely, particularly American. Because Americans were absolutely and particularly lynching black folks on a regular. Men, women, and children. Make no mistake about it. From biography, the lynching of black men and the rape of black women were normalized in the Jim Crow South. Any black woman who dared tell was threatened with death and the death of her family. And that goes on. Remember I said that, because that's some more ish right there, boy. I'm telling you, that is crazy. From The Guardian. They said the killings during the 12-year period as to 4,400 victims from the post-Reconstruction area of 1877 to 1950, bringing the total number of people lynched to 6,500. So another research engine said that in 2015 that identified and recorded more than 4,400 black victims of racial terror lynchings from the post-Reconstruction period 1887 to 1950, the new report allows that grim tally to be further expanded with the addition of the 2,000 documented victims from the Reconstruction era itself. It's 2,000 documented. That's how you get that number, I guess. Bringing the total number of documented cases, total number of documented means known or verified cases of black people who were supposedly free, yet were lynched in the most sadistic fashion. Just as you know, people don't know about lynching. They dismembered, they beat the hell out of you. If you've seen that movie, what's that movie, The Passion? Well, lynching is like that. They dismember you while you are still alive, cut pieces of your body off, your skin off, burn you alive, blind you, or they do a whole lot of stuff to you before they actually kill you sometimes. Basically, statistically, lynching 6,500 men and women and children. 6,500 men, women, and children. 6,500 men, women, and children. They also noted that it was that its newly revised toll of racial terror lynchings in America is likely to underestimate the total by hundreds or even thousands, given gross underreporting of racial violence and widespread efforts to suppress the truth. And if you don't think that happened, the story of Billie Holiday shows you how the truth, how bad that these people wanted to suppress the truth. Anyway, from Provocative Thought, this powerful white government agent feared the popularity of a song that brought attention to the tyranny and atrocities white people perpetrated on black peoples in the United States. Sometimes the truth hurts. Sometimes the truth opens the eyes of the beholder. Like a man who rapes and murders his own children, this monster sought to conceal his dirty laundry to preserve the illusion of being humane. And unlike their European brethren in Nazi Germany, who have a history of exterminating black and white folk. Again, we have an agency that is supposed to eradicate drugs, facilitating and perpetuating the drug use and death of an entertainer who happened to tell the raw truth about America. I heard Ice Cube make a statement like that about his music. If they target an entertainer with drugs and death, imagine what they are willing to do to a community or a leader in the community. You don't have to imagine what they will do. There's another movie about Black Panther, Fred Hampton, titled Judas and the Messiah. I think that's it anyway. He was murdered by police in his bed. The Black Panther was infiltrated by agents in blackface pretending to be revolutionaries while serving their white, oppressive, aggressive, tyrannical masters. See the pattern? Democracy Now! Said Fred Hampton was killed December 4th, 1969, when Chicago police raided his apartment and shot and killed him in his own bed. Black Panther leader Mark Clark was also killed by police in the raid. Assassination. That's what that is. Authorities initially claimed the Panthers had opened fire on police who were there to serve a search warrant for weapons. Okay, so they used the drugs as a weapon to take Billie Holiday down just for singing about, you know, I guess they got tired of the abolitionists from the pre-Civil War days talking about freedom. And I guess they, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to try to figure that out. Why this guy went to focus on Billie Holiday. But there were other people saying and trying to do some stronger things than singing a song. But I guess she was able to reach some white folks that they just didn't want this thing to reach for some reason. Anyway, there lies part of our problem today. One, we had these traitors, these Sambo bootlicking folk who think they can become a part of the power structure and serve the power structure even when they're wrong. Like, why would you do that? We have our own weaknesses. Billie Holiday was unfortunately an addict. That makes her vulnerable, period. I don't care how, which way you swing it. That right there is a red flag. And we need to take heed, pay attention to that. Drugs, not our best friend. Rape and oppression. White men were never held accountable for raping black women, not during slavery, not afterwards, in the Jim Crow South. Unsurprisingly, Taylor has many foremothers, including Celia, a Missouri slave, historian, Milton A. McLaurin, published an elegant book about her case, Celia, but not until 1991. We did not know about Celia until 20 years after our speak out, he said. So in 1850, an aging widower and farmer, Robert Newsom, purchased Celia, a 14-year-old child. Newsom did what they do back in the day. Newsom raped Celia on the way to her home. By the time Celia was 19, she had given birth to two of Newsom's children. So you're wondering why people messing with kids now. They always have been. It's nothing new. Celia warned Newsom to keep away this particular time. When he advanced upon her, she killed him. Burned his body in her fireplace, crushed his bones, and hid some of the ashes. Celia did not flee. She ain't run. Like Celia, when she just waited till she got old enough to defend herself and did so. Boldly, Celia denied everything. Faced with evidence, Celia finally confessed, right? Newspaper reports claim that the murder had been committed without any sufficient cause. Says it said, oh, she just killed this white man for nothing. This monster. This nigga monster. This lie was repeated in the newspapers, right? They tried to assassinate her, demonize her in the newspapers. Which meant that other abolitionist newspapers paid little attention to the story. I don't know why. Celia was tried by all white, all male jury and judge. You can guess what happened, right? Four of the jurors owned slaves. Although the judge remained hostile, Celia's highly experienced white defense attorney, John Jameson, argued that Celia had the moral and possibly the legal right to kill in defense of her honor and her life. According to McLaurin, this argument was both as bold as it was brilliant. This may have been the first time in American history that a woman, slave or free, was seen as having such a right. Listen to this mess. Jameson wanted Celia acquitted. The jury found her guilty and she was sentenced to hang. On December 21st, 1855, Celia was on march to the gallows. The trap sprung and you know what happened. It snapped her neck in the rope. Celia also had many descendants For example, in 1974, 20-year-old black American Joan Little killed her white jailer in Washington. This is 1974. In Washington, North Carolina, after he had entered her cell, brandishing a pickaxe, demanding and receiving oral sex. Little turned the pickaxe on her rapist and fled. Little was not a slave, but she was in prison, which is a form of slavery. Civil rights activists and feminists launched a campaign on her behalf. A jury of six whites and six African Americans found her not guilty. Of course she's not guilty. Where did she get the pickaxe from? She's in jail. Who brought the pickaxe to the scene? The only way it could have got there is that nasty jailer. That's a no-brainer. She killed him with a pickaxe. She didn't have a pickaxe in her shoe under her mattress. Also in 1974, Hispanic American Inez Garcia was tried for killing a man who held her down while another man raped her. Garcia was convicted and sentenced to 5 years to life. They appealed the verdict, arguing that the woman had the right to use deadly force against a rapist. In 1977, the California Court of Appeal overturned the verdict and freed Garcia. Now, that makes like a good thing, but listen, it's good that she got freed, but they had to go to the Supreme Court for that? Do y'all see the pattern here? See how difficult it is to get justice, depending on who you are in this country. Despite such verdicts, whether a woman has the right to kill a would-be rapist in self-defense remains an open question. Not to me. Woman or man. Another story. These are all stories about these, how Ruby McCollum, born Ruby Jackson in 1909, she was a wealthy, married African-American woman in Live Oak, Florida. This story right here just baffles me. She was known for being arrested and convicted in the 1952 killing of Dr. C. Leroy Adams, a prominent white doctor and state senator-elect. The judge restricted her testimony, but she did testify as to her sexual relationship and his paternity of their child. The judge prohibited her from recounting her allegations that Adams had repeatedly raped her and forced her to be his child, to bear his children. She was sentenced to death for the murder by an all-white jury. The sensational case was covered widely in the United States press, right, as well as international papers. McCollum was subject to a gag order. Her case was appealed and overturned by the state Supreme Court. Huh? Y'all hear that? Before the second trial, McCollum was examined and found mentally incompetent to stand trial. She was committed to the state mental hospital, Florida State Hospital, at Chattanooga, Florida. In 1974, her attorney Frank Cannon obtained her release after the Baker Act, and she was not considered a danger to herself and others. What a waste of life. All of that in defense of herself. In 1952, a wealthy black woman kills white doctor, documentary, explores rape allegations and racial tensions. Right? They say she walked, this is the backstory. She walked through the colored entrance of the doctor's office in the small Florida town, right? And fatally shot the white doctor. Prosecutors told the all-white jury that McCollum shot the doctor after an argument over $116, $116 bill. Yet, she was the wife of a prominent businessman who ran a gambling outfit, and she was carrying around $1,800 in her purse on the day she shot him. So she ain't arguing over no $116. She testified that Adams, the son of a powerful political family, was known around town for caring for poor. He had forced her into a long sexual relationship that resulted in an unwanted child, and that she shot him in self-defense. She got tired of that. She got tired of it. I'm trying to figure out, how do you do that? How do you even think you're going to force somebody into a relationship with you? I can't imagine how a black woman could be forced into a relationship with a white man, especially a prominent black woman. But I've been told that this was not uncommon. Apparently, the white masses continue to take some black women out of their husband's bed long after slavery was to have been abolished. If you break the mind, spirit, and will of a man or woman like a horse, he will allow you to ride on his back or work him to death. He will forsake his ability to throw his oppressor or captor off his back or escape his captivity. It is an ultimate act of domination and submission to hold power over a creature or being that is stronger than you or has the ability to resist you, but will not. It is also reason to fear that same creature or individual. From Wikipedia, Lena Baker was an African-American maid in Culpeper, Georgia. There's a lot of down south kind of like stuff going on here. I didn't have time to research every rape case because I know it's too many. I'm just trying to just paint a picture here, so you can see that this stuff was not unusual. There's a reason why it's common. Anyway, she was the maid convicted of capital murder of her white employer, Mr. Ernest Knight. She was executed by the state of Georgia in 1945. Baker was the only woman in Georgia to be executed by electrocution. Right? The slaying and electrocution came during the decades-long period of state suppression of civil rights of black citizens in white-dominated Georgia. Which means she killed him, she might as well have killed herself. The state had disenfranchised people since the turn of the century, of course, and they still do. Since the turn of the century, and imposed legal racial segregation and second-class status upon them. At the time of the trial, the local newspaper reported that Baker was held as a slave woman by Knight, and that she shot him in self-defense during a struggle. But you know a slave can't kill his master. They kill you, they hang you for that. They butcher you, what's that, quarter drawn? What's that thing where they tie your hands and your legs up and horses go in four different directions? Do you like that? Put your head on a spit? In 2005, 6 years after her execution, the state of Georgia granted Baker a full unconditional pardon. In 2005, 60 years after her execution, death, murder, killing by the state of Georgia, they granted Baker a full and unconstitutional pardon. A biography was published about Baker in 2001, and it was adapted for a feature film, The Lena Baker Story. Look, I'm sorry. Is that supposed to mean something? So, some provocative thought again. This is separate the ideas that's going that's being shared tonight. Because I don't want to take the, I don't want nobody to take the hit for what I'm saying. They gave a 60-year unconditional pardon for an executed double victim who was raped by a white man and murdered for defending herself against a white rapist. So this black woman is an afterthought, a way, way afterthought, worthy of an empty, unconditional pardon. Because that means nothing. Did they bring her back to life or something? How are you going to pardon somebody that's been dead for 60 years? This is an example of what can happen when a black person defends themselves against a white person or white supremacy. The scenario is intended to plant the seed of hopelessness, helplessness, fear, and submission in the minds of the slave or descendants of the slave. Rape has long been a tool of tyranny, oppression, and submission. Remember, butt breaking was the strong resistant male on the plantation in front of the total slave population. That's butt breaking. You what, boy? You take that big strong buck, beat him down, bend him over a log, strip him naked, and then the slave master comes and sodomizes him in front of everybody. So sex has always been a weapon, always been used as a weapon of tyranny and fear towards the black community. Saying that to say we should not be using that against each other. We should learn from this. From our history, yo, there's certain things that should be beneath us. All this murdering, this indiscriminate murdering of black folks historically, we should learn from that. We should have got a lesson, at least have adopted some ethics and morals around, hey, we do not kill people indiscriminately. That is not our way. That's wrong. Somehow we didn't get the message. Somehow we didn't write the message. Somehow I don't know what happened to us, but here we are. Anyway, the master taking sexual privilege with a slave's wife actually taking her out of the bed of her husband to satisfy his lust for a black woman and dominance of the black man. That wasn't unusual either. His tyrannical dominance is indicative of his fear for the black man coming to power or coming to the defense of his own tortured flesh, because God knows he needs to defend himself. He's going to die anyway. Betty Jean Owens. African-American woman again in Tallahassee, Florida, 1959. Her trial was significant in Florida and the South as a whole because the white men were given life sentences for their crimes. That's a big deal. Ain't that something? 1959, before somebody looked and said, hey, that is just wrong. We're going to sack it to you. Anyway, here's what happened. In 1959, four white men, William Collinsworth, Ollie Stoudemire, Patrick Scarborough, and David Beagle, set out together to find a woman to sexually assault. They approached a car at Jake Gathers Park armed with shotguns and switchblades. Scarborough pressed his shotgun against the African-American driver's nose and ordered the occupants out of the car. There were four people in the car, two guys and two women from the college, Florida A&M University. They come from some kind of little, you know, they went out together, right? I guess, you know, double dating or whatever. They ordered the black men to leave, and they slowly drove away. They took the girls out the car, ordered the brothers to leave. Y'all get out of here. We're going to take y'all women and do this thing to them. The two black men left at the two black women left at the hands of the four white men were Edna Richardson and Betty Jean Owen. Edna, she broke free and broke camp, got away, ran into the woods, caught up with the brothers, they went to get the police, right? Betty Jean was not so lucky. They drove her to the edge of town and subsequently raped her seven times. All right? They got a cop, a young 19-year-old cop, arrested these guys, right? These guys, these four men were arrested, taken to jail. The four men did not even take their arrest seriously. Right? They said they joked with each other on the way to jail. Who does that? Talks about the kind of crime they just committed. You just got locked up for something. It mumbles the word. This is how confident these guys feel about that. All four men confessed in writing to having abducted Owens at gunpoint and raping her. Wow. I'm just, you know, from Bobaka thought, prior to the Owens case, sentence of this severity had not been imposed in the South on white men accused of raping black women. That is indicative of how often black women were raped by white men. It was not taken seriously in the past. It was not taken seriously because black life is not taken seriously, or should I say, black retribution isn't taken seriously. Y'all hear what I'm saying? When there is no consequence for behavior, that behavior is encouraged by the absence of consequences. You understand? You get paid on Fridays. Every Friday you cash a check, the check cash a place. When you come out, I go into your pocket and take your money. Nothing happens. That's going to encourage me to come back every Friday at the check cashing place and take your money. It's not going to just encourage me to do that. It's going to encourage other folk to do it also. Just using it as an example, if there's no consequences. All right? They ain't doing that to white folks. The black men who were in the car with the girls were unarmed in known enemy territory. You know what I'm saying? This isn't 1659, 1759. 1859, it's 1959. They in the hostile territory. Put a shotgun to his face. Raping black women is not a rare occurrence. Lynching black men, not a rare occurrence, apparently. I don't get it. I mean, communities armed now, but they're not armed in a protective way. You know what I'm saying? From The Guardian, in 1944, Racy Teller was 24 when she was abducted and raped as she walked home from church. or attacked is left on the side of the road in an isolated area. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, assigned Rosa Parks to investigate the case, and she rallied support for Justice Taylor. Two all-white, all-male grand juries declined to indict the six white men who admitted to authorities that they assaulted her. In a 2010 interview, Taylor said she believed the men who attacked her were dead, but she still would like an apology from the officials. Whoa. It's sad. That is so sad. She said it would mean a whole lot to me. The people who've done this to me, they can't do no apologizing. Most of them is gone. The Alabama legislator passed a resolution apologizing to her in 2011. So let me see. I had to screw my head back on because apparently some of our heads must screw on and off. A 2011 apology for a 1959 rape is simply futile symbolism, like putting Harriet Tubman on a dollar bill. Seems America has a habit of letting things fall between the cracks when it comes to the tyranny and trauma of black folk. They want to apologize. Well, you know how many people would like to apologize for their crimes and get back to their lives? Okay. From the Atlanta News. Four white men raped a black co-ed and her case became a landmark. I think it's the same case with, what's the name? With the lady that Owens. Yeah, that's the same case. They pulled a gun out. So, we got rape. Murder, drugs. Let's just look at those three things. Those things were used to oppress black people. Just ask yourself, is that going on in any black community now? Void of any European direct contact? Is that like happening in our community? We know it's happening all over the United States, you know. We know rape is prevalent in the United States. I think it's prevalent in the world myself, period. Any industrialized company probably has a lot of rape going on in it. Halfway industrialized country. For some reason, for many reasons, people rape, so, you know. But it's a lot of rape going on. In the military, in homes, in communities, prisons, churches. A lot of rape. What kind of monsters are we bringing up? Are we raising? Because nobody's born a rapist. Well, here's a twist from Slate. They said the deadly history of they're raping our women. Racists have long used rape to defend their worst racist violence. Right? Which is true. In the late 19th century, rape was a frequent justification for racist violence. Right, Ida B. Wells, Barrett. She She wrote about the lynchings in her pamphlet, Southern Horrors. You know, the South is shielding itself behind this plausible screen of defending the horrors of its women. Because black women aren't defendable or even, you know, I guess they're not human beings to these folks. Anyway, she points out a whole host of Southern newspapers that defended Lynch's law, which in reference to the alleged epidemic of black on white rape. The epidemic, they say, of black on white rape. What? They said that the Memphis Daily commercial editor declared, this commission of this crime grows more frequent every year. There is no longer a restraint upon the brute passion of the Negro. The world knows that the crime of rape was unknown during 4 years of civil war, when the white woman of the South were at the mercy of the race, which is all at once charged with being a bestial one, she writes. This author writes, in reality, they said, these accusations of rape were often covers for consensual and taboo. I mean, you ain't supposed to do it. You don't belong with no Negro. You know what I'm talking about, right? In a sexual relationship with them. Between black and a white woman is like taboo. It's an abomination to some folk. Right? Whites could not, they couldn't get over the idea that a white woman even desiring sex with a Negro. Well, if you look at what people like sexually, you know, if they think about it, they should have been able to figure that out. Thus, any physical relationship between a white woman and a black man had by definition to be an unwanted assault. At the hands of persons unknown is a book about the lynching of black America. So basically that means you risking your life to have sex with a white girl. I don't care if you love her, you love her, y'all both love each other. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Y'all just hit it once or twice, just once. Get caught doing that, you're going to die, brother. Back then anyway, back in these days, they feared black men entering these white women. How much so? Well, a black man in Mississippi was lynched for raping a local sheriff's 7-year-old daughter, right? Ida B. Wells investigated it. Turned out the alleged rape victim was no girl but a grown woman in her late teens. The woman had been found in her lover's cabin by her father, who led a lynch mob in order to save his daughter's reputation. This is a death sentence. They're giving out justice. You know? They own justice. They out for justice, like Steven Seagal. They said, make a list of any anti-black terrorism in the United States, and you will also have a list of attacks justified by the specter of black rape. What is this all about? The Tulsa Race Riot. Y'all know that's Black Wall Street, right, in Oklahoma. They bombed, raped, murdered. I don't know if they raped people in there. They were too busy killing. I think they just killed women and children. I think it's like eight blocks of people accused of attacking and perhaps raping a white girl in the elevator. Man, I heard the man just bumped into the chick. Rosewood, 1923. Oh, Tulsa was 1921. Rosewood, 1923. I did not know. I always, for some reason, I thought Rosewood was before the Tulsa. Anyway, in Florida, sparked by an accusation of rape. A 14-year-old Emmett Till was murdered after allegedly making sexual advances on a local white woman. The story goes he whistled. And they beat him, tortured him, dismembered him, threw him in the Tallahatchie, threw a some kind of fan around his neck, threw him in the Tallahatchie River. At the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, killing 9 people, 21-year-old coward Dylan Storm Roof reportedly told churchgoers, "You rape our women and you're taking over our country. And you have to go." It's worth a look at the second part of Dylan Roof claim, which informs the first. You're taking over our country. Beyond the myth of black rapists was an elemental fear of black autonomy, often expressed by white Southern leaders who unhesitantly connected black political to economic power to sexual liaison with whites. We of the South have never recognized the right of the Negro to govern white men. We never will, Senator Benjamin Tillman of the state floor in the 1900s. We have never believed him to be equal to the white man, and we will not submit to his gratifying his lust on our wives and daughters without lynching him. This fear took its most violent form in the years after the Civil War when blacks won their freedom. The fear you got, the more lynching you got. But it's been with us for centuries, he said. Throughout the antebellum period, whites have lived in terror of a challenge to the racial order and believed that black freedom would lead to a world of Negro domination where they lived as slaves or worked. Likewise, during the 1864 election, Northern Democrats attacked Abraham Lincoln as a black Republican who sought to debase the white race with miscegenation. As my cousin told me, one of his grandparents or somebody or great-grandparents was black, was a non-white person. Similar accusations were used during the Civil Rights Movement, and in the North, urban whites justified residential segregation in patterns that still exist as necessary protection from the violent, sexually aggressive black criminal. I just want to know who stole who and who raped who for 400 years. Hello, we are calling.
Hey, how you doing, Carlo?
What's up, Carlo?
Yeah, I got a story. What you were saying about the rape and so forth like that. The white mob protecting the honor of the white girl, white woman, and everything like that. So back in South Carolina, it was this mixed couple. Black guy, white girl, secret relationship, all that kind of stuff like that. So when the white father found out about it, he was getting his mob together, right? And she found out that he found out about it. So what she did was she got word to her boyfriend. No, wait a minute. Yeah, she got word to her boyfriend that, you know, what was going on, right? And she held off her family in her room with a pistol. It was just like, yo, nothing better happen to him. I'm going to kill myself. She's on that tip, right?
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, he got out of town, went up north, I think to New York or something like that, Philly or Chicago or something, right? And she was waiting for his call. And when she got his call, she took off and joined him up north.
Oh, okay.
So that was like, that was the best story I ever heard about those circumstances, like, you know, like that.
Okay. Oh, he escaped the tree. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened to his brother back in the day. So
yeah.
But you know.
Yeah, that was in the 50s too.
Yeah, it just happened in the 50s. A lot of this stuff, some of this stuff is in the 50s. I'm talking about all this rape and all this stuff.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. And, you know, but if that's the mindset of many white Americans, it explains why they are so paranoid about the black presence. It doesn't justify their paranoia or treachery. It seems they are afraid of black people. They have enslaved, raped, murdered, tortured, dismembered, lynched, and oppressed for centuries. Because they have enslaved, raped, murdered, tortured, dismembered, lynched, and oppressed them for centuries. That doesn't make sense. It's like, it appears white people are their worst enemy, yet they project their fear upon the victim of their indiscretions and transgressions. That make no sense to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, you would have to fear people if you treated them decent. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There's also double standard. Here we have the rapist or support for the raping of black women, deeming that consensual sex between a white man and a black woman has to be raped, thus sentencing the innocent black man to death by lynching, or he gets this long prison sentence.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, a black man engaging in a consensual sexual relation with a white woman would not set him free, but sentence him to a slow, heinous death. Standing before a segregated Jim Crow courtroom in Tallahassee, Betty Jean Owens' quiet but defiant testimony helped convince the all-white male jurors to deliver a guilty verdict. The judge sentenced those four guys to life. That was like a big deal. You know what I'm saying? Anyway.
Yep.
The Tallahassee verdict was a major break from the past, from slavery throughout the bulk of the 20th century. White men assaulted and raped black women with impunity. The conviction and life sentences set a powerful message. For the first time since the Reconstruction, black women could imagine state power being used to protect them and hold white men accountable for their actions. Ain't that something? That's a black men. There's black men on death row for attempted rape or even looking at a white woman the wrong way. Something is wrong with this picture.
Mm-hmm.
Black people still had to depend on their oppressors to get justice for raping a black woman and the unjust conservation of black men accused of raping a white woman. It is indicative of the absence of black power in law enforcement, the judicial system, legislative system, and executive branches of government. It is indicative of the absence of fear of acting in self-defense. White people have murdered and destroyed thriving black communities on a lie with impunity. Blacks are still marching and fighting for equality under the law. Blacks have come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. White Americans feel black fear of the black man is real, though their reason is absurd. White supremacy facilitated, perpetuated their own jeopardy with over 400 years of enslaving, raping, and murdering in the Americas. This carnage is just to keep the black man's penis out of a white woman's vagina. This violence speaks for itself. Even animals don't kill like that. Madmen do. And on that note, we're running out of time, and I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. And just look at what's happening, what was done to us, and look at, and are we doing any of these things to ourselves? Come on, y'all. Wake up. Until next week. I want to thank everybody for calling in to Kenneth Jones, Talk Production, Long Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
Each one reach one, each one teach one.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.